Pastor District Committee to order. It's 6:16 p.m. It's Friday, April 13, 2018. Before we begin, I want to thank Christie Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. This time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phone. Present today, we have Representative Kopp, Representative Ledoux, Representative Stutes, my Vice Chair, Representative Christ Tompkins, and myself, Representative Klayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is Senate Joint Resolution 4, Alaska Legally Acquired Ivory Use Exemption, sponsored by Senator Olson. This is the first hearing of the joint resolution in the Judiciary Committee, and it is my intention to move this resolution out of committee today unless there is a reasonable objection from committee members related to proposing a potential amendment. I recognize that Representative Eastman has joined us. Here to introduce the bill is Senator Olson and his staff, Jim Puckett. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record, and then you may begin your presentation. And welcome to the House Judiciary. It is our custom to let folks get their presentation through before we get to questions.
Appreciate that. Jim Puckett for Senator Donnie Olson. The Senator apologizes that he is not able to make it this evening. Something that was already scheduled, he was not able to change. So I'll be flying solo tonight. We appreciate the opportunity to introduce the resolution to the committee. The need for this resolution came to the Senator's attention after many of his constituents contacted him with letters, emails, conversations, and petitions for the reason that he is representing the northern and western regions of Alaska that has an unemployment rate of 10 to 21%, deficient byproducts provide sorely needed income. Anything that diminishes their ability to have that income can lead to very potentially devastating consequences. By passing it, Senate Resolution 4, you'll demonstrate support for the local Alaska artists who are either using byproducts of subsistence or fossilized ivory, creating beautiful art and selling their handicap for income. To curtail the poaching of African elephant for ivory, six lower 48 states have banned either all ivory or some ivory in addition to elephant ivory. Other states may pass their own legislation banning Alaskan ivory. As of December 2017, 16 states had similar legislation in their process. A couple of the consequences for these actions are it economically hurt disadvantaged regions in Alaska who subsist and use ivory products. The ban on ivory by these lower 48 states are a severe deterrent to people buying Alaskan ivory. What are some things that you should know? It is critical you know that the Federal Marine Mammal Protection Act specifically recognizes Alaska Native rights to subsist on marine mammals and to use the byproduct of that subsistence. It is also important that you know that non-natives can legally own, work with, and sell fossilized ivory. We need our federal delegation to provide for the exemption of legally obtained Alaska ivory from current and future prohibitive legislation by other lower 48 states. So what does this mean for Alaska and individual Alaskans? Ivory artists and craftsmen have already lost some of their customer base and will continue to lose more in the lower 48 states. These statutes do not distinguish between African ivory and legally acquired Alaska ivory. Therefore, it severely hinders the ability of Alaskans to legally obtain their ivory to possess, trade, or sell it. Alaskans and residents of other states who are simply traveling through these states with bans could face harsh penalties for possession. So what does the Joint Resolution 4 do for Alaskans and Alaska ivory craftsmen and artists? It communicates that the Marine Mammal Protection Act protects the rights of Alaska Natives to harvest walrus ivory and to produce a variety of items as an important source in income in rural economics. It communicates that Alaska Native produced beautiful and useful products from raw and fossilized ivory, mammoth, and mastodon ivory. produce beautiful and useful products from fossilized ivory. It also communicates that residents of certain states may be subject to criminal charges for buying, owning, and returning home with items made of legally acquired ivory in Alaska. It also results use or possess. Lastly, this resolution urges the United States Congress to pass legislation exempting legally acquired walrus, mammoth, and mastodon ivory from current and future state laws, banning or restricting the sale, use, and or possession of ivory. I appreciate very much your attentiveness. I am available now to answer questions or to provide additional information to the members of the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Puckett. I'm going to go around the committee to see if anyone has questions. I'll note that we, well, actually, so far we don't have folks, but we have people that want to testify in one of the other bills. So I'll limit folks to one opportunity for questions per member and limit that to three questions. Is there anyone from the committee that has questions about this resolution? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. So I want to ask what it is that specifically hope Congress will do. Are we asking that Congress will, under, say, the Interstate Commerce Clause, you know, pass a law that kind of is going to invalidate state laws banning some of this ivory or any laws that don't distinguish? Is that kind of what we're going for, or is there something else that we're going for?
Through the chair to Representative Eastman, Senator Dan Sullivan has already introduced a bill, S-1965, if I remember right, where it addresses the sections of the Marine Mammal Protection Act, giving permission to Alaska Native to harvest ivory. But it will Alaska ivory. And if you would like, I can put a copy of that section from that bill that he introduced into Congress.
Thank you. And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
So is the intent here to separate African elephants, for example, from the rest of the ivory? And I'm wondering if that is the case. If I'm looking at ivory from an African elephant and ivory from a walrus or a narwhal or a mastodon, is it going to be obvious to me which one's which?
If you know the difference when it's raw or fossilized, but if it's been worked with and turned into a piece of art or, say, it's handled on dinnerware, things of that nature, you'd have to get some professional help to be able to distinguish what type of ivory it is. So to the lay consumer, they would be at the, I wouldn't say the mercy, but they'd have to trust that the merchant that they're buying the ivory from is dealing with legal ivory. Unfortunately, made that distinction between Alaska ivory and ivory from endangered species, most of whom are in Africa.
And follow up?
Last one.
And so is, would the sponsor be amenable to an amendment which would add narwhal ivory to this list of exemptions, kind of separating elephant ivory from all other kinds of ivory?
I'm not sure how this resolution, which is asking for an exemption of Alaska ivory, would be connected with the elephant ivory that you're referring to.
Okay.
I don't think there'll be a problem. I'm not sure how they're connected.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I don't see any other questions. And what I want to do is open public testimony on Joint Resolution 4. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Joint Resolution Number 4? I don't see anyone, and I don't see anyone online, so we're going to close public testimony. So here is where we are in resolution number four. That brings it before the committee. Is there anyone in, at this time that has any interest in offering an amendment to this bill? Representative Easton, is it the subject matter that you just mentioned?
Yeah, I think so. I'd like to talk to the sponsor first before I come to that conclusion, though.
Okay, well, so this is what we're going to do with regard to Senate Joint Resolution 4, because we're running fast up on our 90th day. I'll ask the Senator Olson's staff to stay in communication with Representative Easton. And Representative Easton, as long as you have an email to my office describing the subject of the amendment, I don't need to see the amendment. If you have an email to my office by midnight tonight, then we'll get that. Then you can request that from Ledge Legal. And as soon as we have it from Ledge Legal, we'll be subject to the call of the chair tomorrow if you've actually requested the amendment. And then we'll meet tomorrow and take up that amendment. If you elect not to send anything to my office that you're going to push the amendment, then we will still probably have to meet tomorrow to move this resolution.
Thank you. All right, I understand.
But we will then, but you definitely need to get it in email to my office by midnight tonight. If there's nothing there, then you're waiving your opportunity to request. And then obviously you'll need to send an email to Ledge Legal requesting the opinion. They've advised that they're opening at 10 tomorrow, and they'll be working during the course of the day. So this being, of course, hopefully the last 2 days of the session, we'll all have to be a little flexible with time, but that's what we're going to do with this resolution. Our next order of business today, we're going to actually, because I know there's some scheduling issues going on, we're going to next move to House Joint Resolution 38, which is Alaska Railroad Transfer Act and Conveyances, sponsored by Representative Kopp. This is the second hearing of the joint resolution in the Judiciary Committee. We did not receive any amendments. I would ask if there are any further questions or discussion. Well, actually, we're not going to go to questions. Is there any further discussion amongst members of the committee regarding House Joint Resolution 38? We'll be limited one chance per person and three times, and Representative Kopp, it's your resolution. You get to go last. Any comments or things to say on House Joint Resolution 38? Hearing and seeing nothing, Representative Kopp, do you need anything in wind-up? Not required.
Thank you for letting me set the stage for this conversation to occur, Mr. Chairman, on this important issue. As you know, Mr. Chairman, I believe Congress understood the difference between a fee interest and an easement when they passed the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act, that the adjudication process laid out was for contingent native land claims, not for the settled homestead patents. And this resolution narrowly deals with the transfer of rights as it affects the homestead patent properties. I thank the chairman for allowing me to raise this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I have a motion, Representative Stutes.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move version 30-LS1351/J of HRJ, House Joint Resolution 38, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Hearing no objection, that resolution will move from committee. I will go ahead and start the next hearing while we pass the paperwork around. That brings us next to House Bill 54, our third and final order of business today, Terminally Ill Ending Life Options, sponsored by Representative Drummond. This is the first hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. Here to introduce the bill is Representative Drummond and her staff, Patrick Fitzgerald. Please come forward, identify yourselves for the record, and you may begin your presentation. And I'll ask committee members to save your questions until after the presentation. And I'd also note for committee members that we have several people that want to testify publicly on this, and so we're going to make fast order to get to the public testimony as soon as we can. Representative Drummond, welcome.
Good evening. Thank you, Representative Klayman, Mr. Chairman, and the members of House Judiciary. Appreciate your indulgence after this long, hard day, and we'll try to make this as quick as possible. For the record, my name is Harriet Drummond. I am representative for House District 18. I would like to thank the committee for hearing this bill today. I know that this is not an easy subject for most people. Death is a difficult topic because it is raw and emotional. No one wants to lose a loved one or think about leaving their family behind. And because no one likes to talk about it, and painful. We need to change that. House Bill 54 allows terminally ill patients to ease their pain and suffering by allowing doctors to prescribe medication to aid in dying. This bill allows an Alaskan the right to live and die on their own terms according to their own desires and beliefs. Death is a natural part of life. This bill allows people to be in control of their own care. Providing dignity and peace of mind during a patient's final days with family and loved ones places a much greater focus on a person's life than on the often painful and agonizing process of dying. I wanted to talk to you about why I introduced this legislation. Several years ago, a young woman named Brittany Maynard, who lived in California, I believe she was about 29 years old, was happy, bright, and looking forward to a long and successful life. She had just gotten married, and then she was diagnosed with brain cancer. And this was going to be swift and painful, and she knew what an awful way to die this was going to be. This was not something that could be repaired or healed or taken care of by chemo. California didn't have a medical aid in dying law in place at the time, but she decided to take herself and her husband, her new husband, to Oregon, which has had this law in place for well over 20 years. And there, in privacy, she took advantage of Oregon's death and dying legislation. I don't know how long she had to do it. That's her business, and certainly deserves to remain that way. But her husband, her widower, and her parents then proceeded to work with California's legislation and until they passed it last year. And so now we have the largest state in the union has this legislation. I thought about Alaskans who found themselves in similar situation. Isolated here as we are, far from the rest of the United States, I could not imagine in a fragile medical condition at the end of life wanting to take advantage of a choice like this and not being able to do it at home with my family and my friends close by. I could not imagine having to pick myself up and move to a place like Oregon, thousands of miles away from home, in order to have some control over the last days of my life. This is my second time introducing this legislation, and I've heard from a lot of people who have very strong opinions about this bill. During public testimony, you will hear from family members who have had to deal with things I hope and pray none of you will ever have to deal with. I've also been told that I am evil for introducing this bill. I've been told I'm going to hell. I've been called a Nazi, and I've been told I'm playing God. We hook terminally ill patients up to countless machines that prolong death for weeks. We have machines that can breathe, eat, and urinate for people. We administer CPR on sick patients and swollen, bleeding airways. Be able to help people. I've been told that by introducing this legislation, I'm promoting suicide. I resent that, and I'm going to get ahead of this game. My son was a sensitive, caring, athletic 17-year-old the day he took his own life. Stephen was my oldest child. He loved biking and snowboarding. He biked to Denali when he was just an eighth grader. I have spent years going over every minute of the days leading up to his death. I have agonized over every decision, every word I said, wondering if there's anything I could have done to prevent it. There isn't a day that goes by when I don't think about how old he would be now, or what he might be doing if he was alive today. Suicide is a tragedy, an irrational, self-destructive act that should be prevented at all costs. We don't get to pick and choose which deaths we want to be suicide. Does a patient who decides to quit chemotherapy or stop undergoing life-saving dialysis after years of slow deterioration count as suicide? Does a Marine who is under attack and jumps on a bomb to save his fellow soldiers count as a suicide? Does a Jehovah's Witness who refuses a blood transfusion because of her religious beliefs count as a suicide? Suicide is a healthy person who could live but wants to die. Aid in Dying is about a sick person who wants to live but is dying. This bill allows patients to have important end-of-life discussions with doctors they already know and trust. Without this discussion, well-meaning doctors are faced with prescribing painful procedures even when the patient does not want them and there is little hope for success. People in these conditions have often lost their health and often much, much more. This bill at least lets them control the last and most important decision they have left. Six states and Washington, D.C., have all legalized death with dignity and have seen a dramatic decrease in suicide attempts made by the terminally ill. Hawaii has very recently made that seven states, just last month. Obviously, there's not enough time to see what their statistics are in relation to suicide attempts by the terminally ill, but I hope it will be just as positive. Alaskans should not be forced to make a choice between living out the rest of their life in misery with a terminal illness or taking their own life in a brutal, inhumane way. I urge your support in the passage of this bill to give an end-of-life choice to the person it will affect the most. Thank you. I now turn it over to my aide, Patrick Fitzgerald, to walk you through the sectional. Unless you wish to take testimony first, Mr. Chairman, that's up to you.
I'll actually leave it up to your office. If you want to pass on the section analysis so we can get to public testimony sooner, I'm happy to do that. I know you've got folks that have traveled in from out of state.
Do you have thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd appreciate that. Do you have anyone calling in to testify
as
well?
I have people calling in and people here.
Okay, very good.
Both.
Great. Okay, excellent. Okay, let's, I have Ella Saltonstall, who's traveled a long way to be here. We've already lost two folks who did travel down here today, so I would appreciate allowing testimony to happen.
Okay,
first.
I'm more than happy to go first.
Thank you.
And actually, in a deference to the folks that have traveled and that they've suffered through a long, long floor session, I'm actually going to hold off on questions from the committee, and we'll take public testimony. And so we'll go ahead and open public testimony. 54, and I'll start with people in the room that would like to testify, and I will, and I think Ms. Saltonstall, if you want to come up first. I would note that it's been the usual public testimony, 2 minutes per person. I know the long wait and the long travel. I'll let you have 3 minutes, and others that are they're here in the room, I'll give three. The folks that are online, I think we'll mostly keep that to 2 minutes, but I'll give you a little extra time since you've been very patient with us.
Thank you, Chairman Clayman and the Chair of House Judiciary. Inspired to lead this cause. I'm here to advocate for those there's a potential closure, and I would like that to see be a possibility for terminally ill Alaskans. When I say, well, it's so people won't suffer, and they say, well, of course they shouldn't suffer, and this is about limited suffering. Is already legal. The past Second.
I'm sorry, you're at about the 3-minute mark. If you could conclude your remarks,
yep,
that would be great.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Margaret Dole. And if you're here in the room, if you can register with the folks in back, we'll get you on the list. But Ms. Dole, you're up.
Margaret Dore, D-O-R-E. I'm an attorney from Washington State, where assisted suicide is legal, and I'm here to request that you don't make our mistake. I'm also president of a nonprofit called Choices of Illusion, opposed to assisted suicide and euthanasia. I have prepared a legal analysis, partial legal analysis of the bill, and I have other handouts that I'll be talking about. And one of the first things to understand is that we're not talking about people that are necessarily dying anytime soon. The law has a very broad reach as written now. For example, almost 18, because the criteria is 6 months to live, and that's for that. As far as not causing suicide, I've had three health suicide. One of them told me later I saved his life. So these are traditional suicide. The other issue is aid in dying is a traditional euphemism for euthanasia, and that there's an Iowa law review when I first saw the term being used. And I would also like to talk about that there's been pushback in other states. This year in Utah, they
If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Okay, so I I have these materials which you got online. You should have, but I can hand them out to you after, and there's a break.
It's fine, but we can make them available.
Does anyone have any questions?
Because we have a lot of people that are in the queue.
Okay.
Is there anyone come forward if you'd like to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mary McDowell. I live here in Juneau, and I'm very much in support of this bill. What is sometimes far less manageable than the physical pain that a terminally ill person has is their fear and anguish, not just about death itself, but about the process of dying and what that might entail. For some people, a lot of that can be relieved by just knowing that they have the option to make their own decision to not endure additional hours or days of suffering if and when they reach the point where they're ready and wanting it to end. To me, one of the most compelling arguments in favor of this legislation is the fact that in states with similar laws in place, a large percentage of the terminally ill people who choose to obtain the prescription for life-ending medication ultimately end up choosing to not use it. The beauty of that, both for those who ultimately choose to use the medication and those who don't, is that throughout their dying process, they have the peace of mind of knowing that the option is available if and when their suffering becomes just unbearable. They are then able to stop spending so much of their precious remaining times in dread and worry about some of the what-ifs, and instead they can savor whatever quality of life they might otherwise enjoy in their final weeks and days. Here in Alaska, we highly value individual rights and self-determination, and yet our state laws currently deny mentally competent adults who are already in the midst of the dying process the right to avail themselves, if they choose, of a liberty that they would have if they resided in a number of other states, the right to have some control over the timing and way that their inevitable, already impending death will ultimately occur. From everything that I've read about the track record of death with dignity laws in states that have them in place, there's just simply no evidence of the sorts of abuses that some who oppose this legislation put forth as reasons to deny this right to the terminally ill. Furthermore, I think this bill puts a lot of carefully designed provisions and safeguards in place to provide both rights and protections for the terminally ill. I actually think some of those are so burdensome that it would actually keep people, especially in rural Alaska, where medical providers are limited, might keep them from availing themselves of this. But I understand that having so many levels of protections in place is meant to alleviate any concerns about potential shortcutting or abuse of the process. To the extent possible, I really think our state laws should help ensure that we Alaskans are able to live with the self-determination we hold so dear and to retain as much of our peace of mind as possible until we draw our final breath. If this becomes law, no terminally ill person will be forced to use its provisions if they don't want to. But not passing this bill and thereby denying access to this option to those who desperately want it would seem to me both inhumane and un-Alaskan. So I urge you to support this bill. Thank you
very much. We've got a couple of folks for invited testimony. The first person is Ashley Cardenas, who I believe is calling from Las Vegas. Ms. Cardenas, I'll also give, because you're invited testimony at the request of the bill sponsor, I'll also give you 3 minutes. And I would note, since you're calling in, please make sure you're not on a speakerphone, and hopefully you're on a landline.
Great. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes. Be sure to state your name and any affiliation.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ashley Cardenas. I'm the Policy and Programs Director for Compassion and Choices, the nation's oldest and largest nonprofit working to improve care and expand choice at the end of life. We are here today to lift the voices of the more than 1,200 Alaska CFC supporters across the state and to express our strong support for the intent of lawmakers to authorize medical aid in dying. The legislation before you is modeled after the Oregon Death with Dignity Act, which has been tested and proven safe for more than 20 years. It includes the same strict eligibility criteria and core safeguards. Although opponents may try to use scare tactics and make the same dire predictions raised in Oregon and in every state since to deter you, the facts demonstrate that more than 40 combined years of practice in the authorized states, that the laws do work as intended. there has not been a single substantiated instance of coercion or abuse. To that point, I'd like to just take a couple of moments to address some inaccurate claims that have been heard and will likely be heard later in today's testimony. First, there is a fundamental difference between the act of committing suicide, which is often the tragic result of an unrecognized or untreated mental health disease, such as depression, addiction, or addiction, and a rational, well-considered decision to advance the time of death in the setting of terminal illness and unrelenting suffering. Second, there is absolutely no evidence that authorizing medical aid in dying increases the suicide rate in any state. What we do know increases suicide rates is ready access to firearms, rural geography, and limited access to mental health services. Third, many studies show that the vast majority of those misdiagnoses are either the result of missed diagnosis or underdiagnosis. Rarely are terminal diagnoses delivered, let alone confirmed by multiple physicians, when a patient is not, in fact, terminally ill. Furthermore, physicians are typically optimistic in their estimates of patient survival and generally overestimate the amount of time a patient is likely to live. In fact, one study showed that physicians tend to overestimate by at least 5 times. Additionally, studies show that there is no evidence of heightened risk for patients in vulnerable groups, and that insurers have no financial incentive to pressure terminally ill patients to accelerate their deaths, as there is no substantial cost savings. Thus, decisions about death belong with the dying, and good policy allows them to have open conversations with their doctors, their loved ones, and their faith leaders about their needs at the end of life. The decision to utilize medical aid in dying is only one end-of-life care option, and those who are strongly opposed need not opt for it. But for those who do face the unbearable suffering at end of life, this option can give them both the courage and the hope, allowing them to live fully and as long as possible, and to die peacefully when death is imminent. For the people of Alaska, like Stephanie Scott and William Kenyon, who you'll hear from later, we can do better and we must do better. Thank you for your time, and at the conclusion of testimony, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, also calling from Corvallis, Oregon, is Dr. David Grube, his invited testimony. Mr. Grube.
Thank you very much. This is David Grube, Dr. David Grube. I hope that you can hear me. I was earlier on a landline, but I'm not able to do that now. I want to thank the members of the chair and the members of this committee for listening to a few comments I have to say. But I also want to say I'm so happy to speak to you in particular because I lived in Alaska for many years. I was raised in Fairbanks and graduated from Lathrop High School probably before many of you were born. But I practiced in a very small town in Oregon from 1977 until 2012. And in 15 of those years, our Death with Dignity Act, which is similar to House Bill 54's proposals, was in force. And I did have a number of occasions to work with terminally ill, dying, and suffering patients who asked me to support their choice at the end of life. Contrary to one of your previous individuals who testified, who was not a clinician, and who was not at the bedside of dying patients, aid in dying is a deliberate and careful act. Doctors do not allow patients to use it because they are diabetic or because they just want to die. And in fact, in Oregon, if you look at our data and experience, 95% of aid in dying patients are in hospice and are receiving excellent hospice and palliative care. And as another person who testified said, and I know this for a fact, aid in dying is a palliative opportunity just in and of itself. When people have an opportunity to talk to me, their doctor, about all their end-of-life choices, it palliative and makes them suffer less. And finally, I'd just like to say, after thanking you again for letting me talk to you, is that since Death with Dignity occurred in Oregon, more people have not died. All of the individuals who used aid in dying were about to die, but fewer people have suffered. And so I hope that is true for Alaskans, that individuals who have had internal suffering can write their final chapter and be allowed not to suffer. Thank you so much for letting me testify.
Thank you very much. And that completes the folks that are here for invited testimony. I'm going to go through the list of folks that have called in, and we'll shift now to 2 minutes per person. The first person I've got in the queue is Dr. Jean Anderson, calling from Anchorage. Ms. Anderson.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm Dr. Jeannie Anderson. I'm a medical oncologist. I've been taking care of patients with cancer for nearly 30 years, and I'm very strongly against this bill. There's many reasons that I would like to give, and I'll try to be succinct. The first one is doctors cannot prognosticate and say somebody has less than 6 months to live. Statistics give us approximate average survivals of how long patients might live. Those are data based on historical treatment protocols, and they're notoriously inaccurate with modern treatments that are available now. I'll give you two examples. David White, who said I could use his name, had stage 4 bladder cancer in 2014. If he had asked me to participate in this end-of-life program at that point, I would have had to say, yes, I predict to have less than 6 months to live. He chose to go on a clinical trial, and he's now alive 3 years without evidence of his cancer. I've got another patient who also told me I could use his name. Donald Gunkelberger had a stage 4 lymphoma in 2015. He did not respond to any of the chemotherapy we gave him. He went to Seattle for a bone marrow transplant. The experts there said, no, you're sick. You can't have a transplant because you won't respond. He came home. Again, I would have predicted less than 6 months. Any oncologist would have predicted that. He chose to go home and have no more treatment. 2 years later, he's now alive with a normal quality of life without active lymphoma. So those are examples to show that we cannot prognosticate. This is a group of people you're targeting who we have no clue how long they'll live. When somebody's imminently dying, days to weeks, or hours to days, then it's very easy to tell, and that's where we need to relieve suffering. And I think people are making an excellent point that suffering needs to be relieved, and there's many ways of relieving suffering. If there's existential suffering, they need help for that. They don't need to take some treatment that ends their life before they have the opportunity to close ends with family members and things like that. There's palliative care teams. Many services in the community that can support people going through the difficult process. And then there's just unintended consequences. I'll just mention one. I think the financial...
Dr. Asher.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead and be sure to state your name and any affiliation.
I'm a physician in Dillingham, Alaska. I've been living here over 30 years. I care for people in rural villages. I desire to recommend physicians that this suicide bill not be passed. Physicians, nurse practitioners, and PAs are better trained in relieving pain and comforting a suffering ill patient. With hospice and palliative care and community health aides in rural communities, there is care provided to patients in terminal situations, and we can relieve pain much better than in the past. There are dangers involved in physicians walking away from the traditional Hippocratic oath, causing harm to a patient intentionally. Physicians and nurses and family can be with a patient as they face death and comfort them and care for them to die in such situations. On the other hand, if we live the site we think is going to happen, that's good. In Alaska, we have a very high suicide rate. Having suicide is a legitimate way to end lives. Since a person who is depressed or ill, the world messy, for dealing with life difficulties. Again, I urge you to keep this bill. For physicians and other healthcare providers will be harmed by assisting patients in this endeavor. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for hearing me this evening. For the record, my name is Linda Marcello, and I'm a Sitka resident. I urge you to advance and eventually pass House Bill 54. The summer after I graduated high school, my family changed completely. My father, then a middle-aged college chemistry professor, was unexpectedly diagnosed with terminal cancer. scans found numerous tumors all over critical areas of his body. My dad thus opted for palliative or comfort care only. He would die just 3 weeks after initial diagnosis. Yet during the short time, so much happened to diminish his quality of life. There was a serious infection resulting in a medevac to Seattle and his loss of independence. Although we were able to get him back to Sitka, he carried the emotional burden of being unable to return to his own house. During his final several days, he faced the kind of pain that not even the maximum allowable dosage of morphine could erase. The speed of his downward progression would have likely precluded my dad from accessing a law like Death with Dignity. The proposed law contains a very reasonable waiting period to safeguard against misuse. However, I take comfort in knowing that other terminally ill Alaskans could be helped by House Bill 54. Many terminally ill people have months to contemplate and plan for their death. Unfortunately, that extra time to think often comes with a prolonged period of agony. It remains my greatest hope that Alaska will offer its terminally ill residents the option to die with the assistance of medication. Please support the passage of House Bill 54. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Dr. Luke Liu. Dr. Liu.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, members of chair and members of committee. I am opposed to the House Bill. My name is Luke Liu. I'm an interventional pain physician in Anchorage, Alaska, and I am opposed the House Bill 54 because I think it is a bill permitting assisted suicide and euthanasia in terminally ill patients. I share Dr. Jean Anderson for her respect for sanctity of life and her progressive optimism of ever-advancing community medical care. In my experience as an anesthesiologist and interventional pain physician, I've encountered numerous cases where the medical teams have been wrong about assessing the survival duration for a patient. And, you know, we are not right all the time. If the justice system were charged innocent, where the charge is innocent until proven guilty and we erroneously imprison wrongfully accused, how much more detrimental would the consequences be when a person is wrongfully being given a terminally ill diagnosis with a limited duration? So therefore, I do not think anyone, including experienced medical doctors, should be given such power to definitively limit another person's life expectancy. In my practice, I'm for patients, you know, particularly with cancer pain. And many of these modalities involve non-opioid therapeutic options. And the constant advances in management of terminal illness has offered many more alternative treatment options to patients other than just morphine drip, morphine infusions. And currently, terminally ill patients get enrolled into hospice whose very mission is to ease their suffering and possibly hasten an inevitable and certain death. My question is, why do we need something outside the defined confines of a well-established medical specialty of hospice to introduce some unintended negative social certainties? We're already in a nationwide, statewide opioid epidemic. I am opposed to giving medical providers... I'm opposed to giving medical... Therefore, I am opposed the House Bill 54.
Thank you very much. Next, Susan Schrader. Ms. Schrader, please state your name and any affiliation you may have.
Yes, good evening, committee members. My name is Susan Schrader. I have lived in Juneau for nearly 30 years, and I'm here to offer my full support for this legislation and encourage you to do so also. I'm not sure what to say that would help change the minds of those of you who are opposed to giving up.
Hello, can you hear me?
Very well.
Okay, excellent. I'm just getting a lot of reverb on the line. Okay, my name is Cheryl Dewey, and I'm calling in opposition of this bill. And I do that because I think comparing completely different geographic areas on how a policy with permanent impacts, would affect a rural state versus a different state that has multiple options for health care, that has multiple options for transportation, and multiple options for funding. We do pride ourselves on striving to achieve self-determination, but oftentimes we limit what our choices are. Now, I've got both personal and professional experience. I've suffered multiple painful conditions the majority of my life. And I've also worked for two medical directors, one for the federal government and one for a highly regulated environment, working in the oil field industry. I am a previous liver disease fellow, and I completed a two-semester practicum at Indian Health Service and Patient Education in the 90s. And what I have to say is I value life, and I think that before we legalize something, when our state is facing massive unemployment, huge amounts of depression and drug abuse and suicide and limited options, I think that this bill carries the wrong message. You know, as much as I have not enjoyed the things that I've had to endure in my own medical history.
Ms. Boone.
I have gained so much out of some of the lessons I've learned in my life as somebody suffering with multiple health conditions. And, you know, I was in severe pain before I started using a non-approved...
Mr. Hanson.
For the record, my name is Joel Hanson. I'm 67 years old. I live in Sitka, and I respectfully urge you to support the Death with Dignity legislation before you. Like a lot of people in their late 60s, I have some personal knowledge and experience with end-of-life issues. My father died almost 30 years ago from cancer. My mother, my sisters, and I all spent time helping him through a prolonged and difficult period of deteriorating health at home, where he eventually died hooked up to a morphine pump, which he needed in order to keep his pain in check during his last few months. Then, 15 years ago, my mother died, also of cancer, also in pain, and also at home with her children at her bedside. When I heard about this legislation recently, I went online and listened to a recording of the hearing it received before the House Health and Social Services Committee on the 30th of January. To those who supported the bill at that hearing and to those who supported here today, I say thank you for your efforts. End-of-life issues are not easy to deal with, but deal with them we must, both personally and as a society. To those who opposed this legislation in January and to those who may have determined to oppose it today, I say this. It is the epitome of cruelty for a person to force agony on another person simply because of a religious or ethical belief in the sanctity of life. If this is your position, as it was for the only two objectors at the January hearing, is in effect condemning someone else to suffer pain in order to avoid being subject yourself to nothing more than a measure of doctrinal or ethical distress. Call it whatever you want, but don't call your position a commitment of your devotion to a compassionate God or higher moral sense. No, call it what it is, a commitment to prolonging human anguish. I have my own confession. If I find myself near my own life's end in the same kind of shape my parents were before their deaths, I have a backup plan. It won't be the most dignified solution, but absent a legally sanctioned pharmaceutical alternative, it will be better than suffering and possibly causing those around me to suffer. I know what that's like. I hope that those of you who still are undecided on Death with Dignity will give some thought to the fact that at least a few elderly and seriously unwell Alaskans choose to take their own lives every year with a bullet. $50 Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is William Kenyon. I am 76 years old and a resident of the city of Cordova, Alaska. A year and a half ago, I was diagnosed with idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, which is a terminal diagnosis. There is no cure for this condition. I will slowly lose my ability to breathe and near the end be restricted to bed care. I had a friend in Oregon who died of terminal cancer and using the Oregon law in that state went through the process of being approved for medical aid and dying. My friend never used that help. Her explanation to me was that every day and every moment she was not helpless, but had a valid choice of her future. That fact gave her a great degree of peace, and as time went on, through the pain and discomfort, she would put off the decision for the next day and continue to live for another day. Although I have not yet reached the last weeks or months of my life, I agree with my friend. I would like a choice also. With no hope when I reach that stage, I would like the right to choose with a clear mind when it is time for me to leave this world. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify who has not testified? Please come forward, ma'am. Please state your name for the record, and we give you 2 minutes to testify.
Thanks. My name is Maureen Moore, and I live here in Juneau. I thank you all for getting this bill into justice, judiciary at this late hour.
I know it's late.
Probably not going to last. And I seriously make plans for the end, and I would rather in the state that I love, surrounded by the people that I care about at the end of my life. I've seen and a hospice trainer for nobody and I would certainly like to have that choice at the end of my day and not leave my family with of suffering that don't easily disappear. So your time and mine are valuable, and I would just ask you to please support this legislation, and I hope that maybe it can even come to the floor of the House this year.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify? I don't see anyone else online, so I'm going to close. At this time, we will recess for the evening, and we will recess to the call of the chair. Given our floor session scheduled at 11 a.m., I can't, but I assure you at some point tomorrow we will come back to take up House joint or first bill we heard today, which would be Senate Joint Resolution Number 4. So keep an eye to both your email tomorrow, as well as if I can announce it on the floor, I will. But we will meet at some point tomorrow, and as noted before, if you want to offer amendments, you've got a midnight deadline to let my office know. Thank you very much, and we are adjourned. It is 7:16 p.m.